This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. A nationwide survey conducted by Cigna Insurance found that half of Americans are lonely. Even in Canada, loneliness is considered an epidemic that not only affects Canadians' mental health, but physical as well. With all our technology and ways to connect with one another, you'd think loneliness wouldn't be an issue, but apparently it is. Author of Breaking the Feedback Loop, A.N. Turner, is going to join me to explain how and why loneliness is an epidemic. Thanks for joining me, Turner.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you start researching into, like, what makes people lonely?
I was at the University of Pennsylvania researching our relationships with the internet and technology more broadly, and was fortunate enough to be able to go into tech after at a partner of Facebook working on advertising technology. And I started to really think about what the technology was doing to us and why, in a more deep way, working in tech. And one of the, you know, important things I was thinking about was what are the consequences and why? I think that definitely loneliness is one of them. So I've done like a lot of field research, and I ended up, you know, writing this book. And in the book, I talk about it as well.
What did you find to be the main culprit in when it comes to tech?
So essentially, people are most motivated to go to social media when they're feeling lonely, when they're isolated, because that's when the benefit of having that, if immediate, kick of social stimulation is highest from seeing your friends online. The problem is that after that immediate kick wears away, you're not feeling any less lonely. In fact, you're feeling more lonely because you're contrasting your isolated self with the lives of other people online. And oftentimes, you know, they're with their friends, you know, guys and girls, whatever. That amplifies the loneliness. But people don't see that because it's very easy to be blinded by the short-term, you know, kick that you can get and the short-term feeling of being a little less lonely when you're on social media. In the long term, though, I think it only increases loneliness.
You keep saying, like, they're getting that kick. It almost sounds like an addiction. Is that going to turn into one?
Well, I think that there is this just kick that you get because Facebook and other social media companies streamline, you know, all this content from your friends. So it's essentially like a gossip hive, but amplified. And, again, you know, you're seeing your friends, and so at some level, you're feeling a little bit less lonely. But then once the, you know, comparison starts subconsciously of, you know, you alone and other people together, that makes it pretty bad. You know, one person I interviewed in a field interview told me that she thought that basically when you're alone today, you're not just lonely because you're alone. You're also lonely because you're seeing everyone else together when you're alone. But, you know, if it wasn't for that short-term kick, like you're saying, I think people wouldn't be going to it. But, you know, one of the biases and difficulties we have as people is, you know, seeing the long-term consequences to, you know, the delayed consequences to what we do, whether it's drinking sugar water or checking social media, problem partially.
Throughout your research, did you notice that it was a generational thing? Like, was there loneliness equal amongst baby boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials? Or was there, like, there was a big difference?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think that rates of mental health issues have increased with this generation. I think part of that's probably increased exposure to these things, especially when young, you know, these things being social media specifically, and having that amplified loneliness, you know, especially when kids are in their teenage years, when they're looking for acceptance from the social community, you know, when they're alone and they're seeing other people together, that's pretty painful, I think, cognitively. So I went through a period where I reviewed a lot of research, and, you know, there are 100 plus citations in the book. But then I really started to think really hard about explaining the stats and getting into the why. And so I think that contrast explains the loneliness part.
The one thing about the internet is that it's supposed to connect you to everybody and to anything, you know, information, people, whatever. And with that being said, there are places you can go online so you can meet other people. You can go out for outings, you know,
right,
social gatherings and stuff. How is it that people are still lonely then?
I think that for some people in certain cases, especially when they're more isolated, whether it's geographically or they have more eccentric interests or characteristics, the internet is a very valuable way to connect with other like-minded people. But I think, you know, most people are blinded by that kick that they get when they're alone, and so essentially are irrationally using this thing that makes them feel more lonely when they're alone with regards to social media. You know, definitely real relationships can be formed online, and that can definitely, you know, reduce loneliness, you know, when taken to the real world. But my issue is that, like, I think a lot of these technologies just make it really, you know, they just make it easier and easier to spend all of your time alone. You know, whether it's the emotional gratification that you get from watching TV shows or movies or video games, or the sexual gratification from pornography, you know, or just like the kicks from social media, all this stuff basically reduces the opportunity cost of being alone. And so people are basically less motivated to spend more time with other people. What they're not realizing is that there's this incredible value from face-to-face interaction and from going out, and they're not getting that enough, I think. And I think that's probably one of the most crucial problems with this generation among many. So I think that those who recognize this and who start connecting the consequences to their youth can really, really improve their lives and be leaders in hopefully some degree of cultural change. Because, you know, just with the stats, it's needed between, you know, because like a lot of this stuff ends up basically invading and infecting professional life or education. And all of a sudden people are hooked on these constant dopamine spikes, which manifest in constant distraction. And that's the wrong state of mind to be in to get anything done, to learn. It makes life worse. You're less effective. All of a sudden you can't even, you know, you're less likely to go out at night and see friends because you don't have the time anymore. You didn't get enough done. So I think people really need to step back, you know, having worked in tech and having studied this topic for 3 years now, they need to step back, really question their assumptions, not just go with what the crowd is doing, think for themselves and use this stuff rationally.
You know, I'm glad you talked about the not going out at night to see your friends, because I do that often. And a lot of times it's because I just don't have the energy to do anything. You know, you work all day, you get home, you're like, oh, I just want to watch a movie. And you end up going into that cycle. And you're right. It's an easy way to reward yourself constantly, right? But when does that cycle become negative, right? When should you start saying, hey, maybe I should go out?
I think that one of the things that people haven't priced into how often they use these things is that there's an immense switching cost from going from working to distracting yourself for like a few seconds on social media, or by basically rolling the slot machine and unnecessarily checking email. You know, what's much better is just to focus on something, you know, let yourself maybe, you know, relax and decompress, like by getting a drink of water or something. You know, that's just so much better than a lifestyle of constant distraction and multitasking, especially once you review the science that shows, of, you know, that shows that there are switching costs to this, meaning that, like, you know, when you go back to your work, you may immediately think that you're actually more energized from that distraction, but your mind's been basically, you know, picked up and brought out of focus. And when it goes back into focus, it takes time to get back, settle back into the task. And that's not the same thing with getting a distraction from a break from getting water or such like that. I think that for everyone, you know, trying to move from a lifestyle of constant multitasking to a life of single tasking, you know, focusing on singular tasks for sustained periods of time without distraction is going to immensely change their lives. For me, it was an incredibly emotional moment when I connected my difficulties I thought I had, you know, working and finding the time to go out, to this behavior that I thought was completely normal my whole life. The only issue, I think, is not enough people have reviewed the research that are young. Most people are essentially swept away. You know,
you talk about the way you've been making changes. And let's say I decided, like, hey, today's the day. I'm going to quit all this stuff. I'm going to go out. I'm going to finally have that brunch with my aunt that I've been putting off for months. You suddenly realize that everybody else is kind of hooked on the internet too, and they kind of don't want to go out or don't have energy to do anything.
Oh, no. So, like, essentially, as more and more people are hooked, basically more and more people are less interested in going out. So you actually feel like it's easier to stay in and yourself be not, you know, interested in socializing or anything else but the digital world. And that sort of, it's a negative feedback loop. And it's really hard, I think, to reverse that. I mean, I hope we will, you know, because it's just so valuable. The research shows, you know, face-to-face interaction, and we're really only seeing bad things associated with more use of things like social media and such. You know, so hopefully that'll change, but it's hard. You're right. Most people are completely blinded, and, you know, having worked in tech, the tech companies are fully incentivized for that to happen, because social media's business model, for those who are not aware, depends entirely on ads, which means that the more time people spend, the more money they make, because they can sell more ads and get more data on you to make the ads more targeted and expensive. So they have no incentive not to make it as addicting as possible, which they, you know, build into their design. And I can go into how that's addicting as well. But people need to be aware of this, because incentives shape behavior. And in this case, the incentive is to keep us hooked. And that's misaligned with our interests, because that's not what's best for us.
Wait, so all of this is designed to continue to keep us hooked on it? But then who's going to be out there taking the pictures so I can stare at them all day? It's like, how's that going to work then, right?
So basically, I think that one of the things that motivates people to use social media is this desire for validation. So you're comparing yourself against the people that are, you know, romanticizing their lives, which they do because the content is permanent. And there's so much exposure to so many people. You know, they don't want to show authentic content that may expose them to, you know, emotional pain if that content's criticized. Instead, people upload superficial content that deflects their vulnerability to criticism because it's, you know, not really them. So you're comparing yourself against these glorified lives in response to the design. You feel worse about yourself. And so what do you want to do? Through that same medium that created the insecurity, upload new content and get validation from people. Likes, hearts, whatever that is. And so it's this feedback loop of peer comparison and external validation that drives people to upload, you know, to go out and try and upload the content, get the likes, et cetera. But external validation is also not a good thing. That, like peer comparison, or, you know, what psychologists call social fantasy comparison, is associated with symptoms of depression, from what I understand.
You can't avoid social media. I think that's the thing that's kind of stinks. You can't avoid it. It is what it is. It's going to be a part of us for many years to come. Who knows what's going to knock it off, but it seems pretty ingrained right now. So with that being said, what could you do to eliminate social media from your life? Because apparently not only is it going to make you addicted to wanting to come back, but it's also going to make you feel worse about yourself and make you feel very lonely.
It'll essentially erode your sense of self-confidence and make it attached to external validation, you know, sometimes from people you don't even know. And that's just much, much less valuable than spending your time cultivating real relationships with people, few people, meaningful relationships, and meaningful work. So I personally think that there's actually really not much value to social media. I think even in professional cases where you want to build a network, much more value, I think, is in finding and having meaningful relationships. I personally have social media because I have changed how I use it, where I don't spend any energy resisting impulses, right? Because it's one thing to not use it, but it's another thing to be able to resist the impulses without it draining you. Because it's constantly in front of us, right? If I was less able to resist the impulses, I would not have it. But essentially, the main thing I've done to improve my use of it has been to stop using notifications. You know, the notification pool is how you check basically who's interacted with your profile. And since we're connected to so many people and our profiles are available 24/7, it's very tempting to constantly check these notifications, basically to monitor, you know, how people are interacting with your profile, what they're liking, you know, et cetera. It makes sense, you know. We care about how people see us. The problem is that you can essentially be constantly brought back to social media, constantly rolling the, or using the slot machine of checking to see, you know, who liked your picture, yada, yada, yada. And none of that truly matters, especially for knowledge workers, where it really helps to focus on singular things for sustained periods of time. And so I've completely stopped looking at notifications. And this is actually very interesting because many of the books on this topic and people that have written about this have not mentioned that. But I think that is the core source of addiction. And so over the course of 2 years of not checking any notifications on Facebook, I only once almost missed one event that was planned exclusively through Facebook. But like a day before the event, I was in the gym and I saw a buddy who told me about the event and I made the event. So I haven't missed anything and I basically controlled my digital life. So I do have it and I recommend that other people, I either essentially eliminate it or just stop checking notifications.
You know, something so simple, you don't realize that, yeah, you know, notifications, it does ping every time something happens. You're like, oh, okay, let me go check real fast. And you don't realize how automatic it became.
100%. And it's our reaction to any kind of unpredictable reward. We end up basically obsessing over when we're going to get it. And that was shown with Pavlov's dog in psychology. It's very well known. It's known to thought machine, you know, makers in Las Vegas. And it's known to the social media companies as well. But as people, you know, if we're aware of that, we can sort of shape how we use it. And that's very important.
Well, Turner, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
you know, I released this book, Breaking the Feedback Loop, goes into more detail. That speaks a little bit more poetically about this stuff. And there's also a website, breakingthefeedbackloop.com. I have an email there as well for anyone who wants to email me. Always happy to talk about these topics.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.